Good afternoon, and welcome to the second episode of the Green Circle Podcast. Thank you for joining us. My name is Scott Ledden, and I will be your host. As a reminder, the purpose of this podcast is to bring together industry experts from the commercial construction, real estate, and design community to discuss and debate common industry challenges. In episode one, our guests discussed many anticipated challenges related to getting back to work, which was fantastic, and one common piece of advice was the need to consult experts, and that's exactly what we're doing today. I'm very happy to be joined today by Leah Nebel, a partner at the law firm of Blaney McMurtry LLP, specializing in construction law and commercial litigation. Welcome to the show, Leah.
Thank you very much, Scott. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure. Before getting started, it's important to note that the information in this podcast is intended to provide information and comment. The information and views expressed are not intended to provide legal advice. Listeners are advised to seek specific legal advice regarding any specific legal issues. And with that behind us, are you ready to get started, Leah?
Sounds great. Thank you.
Okay. As we discussed earlier, Leah, you know, the COVID crisis is presenting everybody with a huge number of challenges in terms of getting back to work safely. You know, we've seen it already, having gotten back to work today, most stakeholders are implementing protocols that are designed to minimize the risk of becoming infected. And the challenge with many of these protocols, at least as far as I know, as a layman and not a lawyer, is that they're guidelines only and not laws. And so they may be difficult to enforce, and implementing some of them are going to affect productivity and schedules, which may result in increased costs. And what I'd like to do on this show today is to discuss a few scenarios that are likely to occur on a construction site and get your opinion on the legal impact facing the various stakeholders. Does that seem like something you can assist us with?
I sure can.
Fantastic. So I kind of laid out a few different scenarios I'd like to go through that we have anticipated and we kind of discussed in our first podcast. And the first one relates to PPE. So I'm thinking, you know, a contractor may require a mask, a shield, and gloves, which to me would be considered the gold standard for trades and anybody on site to be wearing. But if somebody comes to site as a trade and refuses to wear all of these items, can they be refused entry to the site? And I guess where and how is the line drawn on these issues, since it's not law and it is a recommended policy?
Okay, so I think where I'd like to start is just talking about risk assessment, because I think that is right now what the government is encouraging all businesses, including construction, that are reopening to focus on. So in terms of the law, under Ontario law, employers have a duty to keep workers and work sites safe and free of hazards. And that's set out in the Occupational Health and Safety Act, and also directives coming from the Chief Medical Officer of Health. So I think the first thing that, you know, the law and the government is requiring right now is to do that risk assessment on site. Mm-hmm. Based on existing health and safety laws and also those guidelines that you referred to that the government has published on their website, that, you know, businesses should be consulting for their specific sector. And they set out a number of guidelines to help people stay safe. So when you're thinking about, you know, what health and safety requirements are going to be required during this time period, it's going to vary from site to site. So you mentioned the gold standard of the PPE, mm-hmm. but it may not be something that's going to be required for all tasks on the site. It may only be required for certain tasks where the workers aren't able to properly physically distance themselves.
So I hear what you're saying, and I guess, you know, I think in general, Canadians have done a fantastic job of adhering to the guidelines as they've been imposed. And I think that's why, you know, we've done a fairly good job of keeping things under control here. But everyone has a different idea as to what is reasonable. And so, you know, I know that most contractors are going to have a firm policy in place. And if, as you suggest, there are certain circumstances that dictate certain things, who and how are those calls going to be made? Like, obviously, the easiest thing to do is say everyone has to wear gloves, mask, and shield. And then somebody might come on and say, I don't want to wear a shield. I find it very difficult to, you know, see through to. It kind of gets in my way. Is it up to the site supervisor at that point, Leah, then, to make that call? and say, okay, I think you're going to be safe, you know, with the mask and gloves or just the mask in that case? Or what's your sort of feeling on that? Who would make that call?
So I think, first of all, the guidelines, those are minimum standards.
Okay.
And so you've got to look again at what are the specific tasks that the workers are performing on site. Now, responsibility for health and safety on a site usually belongs to the owner, but also the party, like the general contractor, that undertakes to be the constructor under their contract and to look after those issues. And they're the ones that are going to be putting together the health and safety policies that are to be followed by all the trades coming onto the site. So to me, my view is that if that type of policy is put in place, that the workers do have to follow the requirements that are being set out in the safety policy for the site. I don't think it's any different than wearing a hard helmet and safety boots. Just because the helmet might be uncomfortable for somebody doesn't mean that they don't have to wear it, for example. That's the way I'm looking at it in these times.
Okay. So depending on – it really is going to be it seems that it's going to be contractor specific. Some contractors might say you need to wear a face shield and some might say you don't. Some might say you need to wear safety glasses and some might say we're more concerned with masks. And I guess as this rolls out, you know, word will probably circulate around the industry what different companies are doing and people likely change to get the most effective and efficient protocols. Is that how you sort of see it playing out?
I do see it playing out that way. I mean, there are going to be basic things that everybody has to do on site that are set out in the guidelines. And that's, you know, no matter if it's construction or not. I mean, having basic, you know, facilities in place to be able to wash hands, for example, is something that everybody's going to have to follow. And I think you just need to adapt it to the type of work that's being done. So if there's, for example, an area where two workers have to work together, and because of the nature of the task, and they're unable to stay 2 meters away from each other, then, you know, that situation would have to be assessed, and maybe gloves and masks would be appropriate to keep the worker safe in that scenario.
Yeah, and that, I think, makes a lot of sense. And again, I think 99% of people out there are wanting to get back to work, and more importantly, wanting to get back to work safely. And I think that, again, 99% of those people are going to be using their common sense to make those types of decisions. And, you know, at the beginning of this crisis, I know there was some directions that construction was to stay operational, but you weren't supposed to have more than 5 people on site at the end. And that was challenging. So you go, well, how are you supposed to do that? And again, everyone is trying to follow these guidelines to the best of their abilities. And you just hit one of the questions I had was there are definitely certain tasks on site that you cannot maintain social distancing. And if the sites are supposed to be open and we're supposed to be delivering sites for clients, what do you do? And I think your notion of increased PPE would probably resonate well with the workers who are doing that, as well as with the contractors responsible for maintaining the health and safety on site.
That's right. And you do have two different sides here. You have the employers or the constructors that do have that duty to keep workers safe. And then you have the worker side where they have the right to refuse unsafe work.
Right.
Now, you know, that, you know, feeling safe at work may be somewhat subjective depending on the individual. But I think that there has to be quite a bit of dialogue, and also people have to, you know, do their best to cooperate under the circumstances.
I would agree with that. Now, question, I know that I was, you know, you read the news and see these things. I know airlines have mandatory mask policies, is what they say. Then they recognize that, in fact, they can't actually enforce that. What if it gets to the point where, you know, in the policy and the site supervisor is greeting the trades at the door or the entrance to the construction site, going through the policies that are required, and a trade just says, I'm not wearing a mask, I don't like a mask, I don't think it's necessary, you know, here I am. Are they allowed to refuse them entry to site? And if so, what are the implications of that?
I mean, I think if it is in the policy that on this particular site everybody has to wear a mask, then I think they do have the right to refuse that particular individual from working on the site. But what I would say, though, is that, you know, there has to be some common sense, and there also has to be reasonableness. So
okay.
to require, you know, a blanket policy that everybody has to wear a mask, the person putting that policy in place should be able to point to the specific risk that they are trying to guard workers against by saying you need to wear a mask. Right now, I'm not aware of any law that requires everybody going to work to wear a mask.
Right. So, if, for instance, if somebody is working on a 20,000 square foot site by themselves and the inspector shows up and they're not wearing a mask, they likely won't be in any kind of legal trouble because the risk is not just there. It's not like they're with, you know, close to 50 other people and unable to maintain social distancing.
As far as I'm aware, that is the law right now. Yes.
Okay. Okay, well, I think that answers my questions on PPE, and I'd like to just move to a second scenario that is very common, obviously, and that is just individual buildings downtown are implementing various policies for building access, such as, you know, potentially screening people as they enter buildings and limiting the number of people entering elevators, for example, you know, two people maximum in a freight elevator. Depending on the number of jobs going on in a particular building and the size of the crews on each of those jobs, implementing policies like this could really slow down daily productivity. You know, up to, I've heard people estimate they might lose an hour of productivity each day just by getting people to and from site. And once again, with these laws, well, these policies rather, not being laws, strictly being voluntary policies, which you and I have discussed are in what appears to be the best interest of the public health, who and how are those incremental costs addressed on a project?
Okay, so for in terms of elevators, I mean, the reason why, we all know the reason why people are going to be limiting the number of occupants of an elevator is because right now there is a requirement to have physical distancing, and you're supposed to be staying 2 meters away from others. And that is actually a directive from the Chief Medical Officer of Health.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, businesses do need to comply with those directives. And
okay.
so while it may be inconvenient and it is likely to slow down productivity, particularly as things start opening up, I think right now that is just going to be a reality for all businesses that everyone is going to have to deal with.
And so, you know, there's a lot of contracts that are have been stopped midstream that were signed off on prior to the COVID crisis with fixed prices, you know, guaranteed in the contract. And now that there's likely going to be incremental costs associated with executing the work required in those jobs, who pays for that? How does the contractor either recoup the incremental cost of their trades, or can they recoup costs from someone?
That's a good question. The starting place is going to be the contract. So that's where we always have to look to see, well, what are the rights, obligations, and responsibilities of the different parties?
Yeah.
Now, there are some contracts that will specifically provide for what happens when there is a delay event. So you may have heard the term force majeure,
yep.
and some contracts contain a force majeure clause that will excuse one or both of the parties from performing the contract, or may also suspend performance due to certain events. Now, typically, illness and pandemic have not been part of the language used in force majeure clauses. They've been things like wars, et cetera. So typically what a party is able to claim under a force majeure event is an extension of time to actually perform the contractual obligation.
Okay.
And so there isn't always a contractual ability to obtain increased costs or compensation for that delay event. So you really do have to look at each individual contract.
Mm-hmm.
In some, there is also a requirement that if you want to claim make a claim for increased compensation, that you actually have to bring notice. You have to give notice to the party that you contracted with that there is some kind of a delay event and that you will be seeking compensation for any extra costs incurred. Now, that is subject as well, though, to that particular contractor's duty to mitigate. And a duty to mitigate at law means that that contractor does have to take all steps that they can to try and minimize those costs, minimize the extra expenses that they may incur because of the delay event. Now, there are some contracts that might also have escalation clauses in them. So, you know, if it may be rare, but, you know, it could be that you may be able to adjust a contract price because of something that's happened in the marketplace. So you may want to look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Loss of productivity claims can't always just be made if a contractor has become less productive. It has to be linked normally to some kind of an owner-caused event or maybe even event that the owner has expressly agreed to assume a contractual risk. So I think that, you know, a lot of contracts, it could be a little gray at this point if they entered into the contracts before COVID and, you know, and this idea of COVID or a stop work order from the government related to COVID may not have been provided for and probably wasn't provided for specifically in these contracts. So at the end of the day, you know, we probably are going to see claims, but I think everybody has an obligation to, you know, minimize extra costs. And I would hope that there would be a lot of collaboration between owners, contractors, the sub-trades as to how everybody is best going to deal with this reality.
Yeah, and it's you've acknowledged it and we've all acknowledged it. It's a very, very complicated situation and it's, you know, a once in a 100-year event that clearly is not you know, taken into account in most contracts out there for those reasons. But you did mention something I thought that was very interesting was the duty to mitigate. And that sounds to me like it just highlights the importance of having a very solid COVID-19 policy to make sure that once we are given the green light to get back to work, that your policy is robust enough to really minimize the risk of another future shutdown on your site due to either an infection or suspected infection. Is that fair to say?
I would completely agree with that, yes.
Okay, well, that's great. So moving on to, I think, the last point that I would like to make here, and the question is, what if a trade who has regularly been on site gets diagnosed with COVID-19? I don't believe it's the law to shut down the site for a period of time, but it might be considered a good idea, and it might be, again, using someone's best judgment to shut down the site and have everyone that has been on site to that point self-isolate. If you do that, though, the site will be shut down for 2 weeks. And once again, there's the issue of how does that impact schedule and who's going to absorb those costs of trying to get back on schedule. How do you think people should consider addressing that type of situation, Leah?
I think, first of all, again, we should go back to the guidelines that have been published by the government. And right now, what the government is saying is that it's recommended right now that if any worker who has any symptoms related to cold, flu, or COVID-19, that they be sent home.
Okay. Just that individual?
Just that individual.
Okay.
And then, you know, the employer should advise anyone who then begins to feel unwell to return home and to self-isolate immediately. So, for example, you know, in the case of somebody who does have those symptoms, they really should be going home. They should be reporting the illness to their supervisor. And the supervisor is probably going to want to find out from that particular worker the names of the people that they have come into contact with on the site.
Mm-hmm.
Just so that, you know, you could trace the possible spread. to other workers on site. So maybe creating a list of people that worker could have been in direct contract with that day, and if possible, in previous days. Then what you need to do as well is you need to identify and create a list of locations where the worker was recently working, including any common areas such as lunchrooms and washrooms. And those areas should be barricaded off until they're properly cleaned and disinfected. The other thing that, you know, a supervisor may have to do is they may have to contact the local health authority for further direction, because it may depend on the number of cases. They at that point have to follow what local health authorities say in terms of what they should be doing. And again, then it comes down to, well, then if that particular trade can't be on site for 2 weeks and there's nobody to replace those workers, you know, who absorbs the costs? And again, I think you do have to go back to the contract and read what it says. And then I think seek, you know, specific legal advice for your particular situation.
Yeah, and once again, I think this really highlights the intricacies of this particular situation being a 1-in-100-year event, and it's just there's so many different possible permutations and combinations of what might happen. I think your point is very valid. Everyone has to use their best judgment and act in the best interest of the public health, and I think generally, in most cases, all of these items will be ironed out as they arise. But I just want to try and sort of sum up our discussion to this point, and we talked a little bit about health and safety risk assessment and as it relates to PPE on site. And your advice was, you know, there's obviously a minimum as provided in the guidelines, and then you can adapt specifically to the work being done on site. If you cannot maintain your 2-meter separation, then you might want to increase your PPE if necessary. We talked about access in buildings, and we talked about building accessibility laws, and you know, those have to be adhered to. Everyone is being asked to socially distance. Elevator access is an issue, so it is going to affect productivity potentially. But once again, in the best interest of public health, that's what it is, and it's going to be up to everybody to manage as effectively as possible, and potentially review contracts and see if there might be some way to mitigate those increased costs. And then getting back to working on site, if somebody is infected, it's not the law to shut down the site. You use your best judgment. You do contact tracing. You look for common areas where they may have been and sanitize those areas, and really continue to watch and monitor all those that are on site to make sure that there's no further infection. Have I more or less brought this green circle and summarized all our points?
You have. Excellently.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I just want to ask where people can reach you, Leah, should they need real legal advice. Where can they get a hold of you?
Well, I'd be happy to discuss these topics with anybody. And the best way to reach me is by email at lnebel, LNEBEL, at Blaney, BLANEY.com.
Fabulous. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us. I really appreciate your insights, and I want to wish you a safe and healthy rest of your day, and hope you get back to your office very shortly. Thank you so much.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.